Hello, it's Larry Clark from Excelsa Music Publishing with another From the Composer series. And today we're talking to composer Robert Thurston. Hey, Bob, how's it going?
It's going quite all right. How are you?
I'm great. So we want to hear a little bit about how you got into this whole mess of composing music and, you know, writing for band and things like that. If you give us a little synopsis of that.
Well, biographically, I'm originally from Tallahassee, Florida. I lived there for most of the first 32-ish years of my life. I was a high school band director for 5 years, and then found my way kind of surprisingly into the U.S. Air Force band, where I worked as an arranger for 20 years. I retired in 2014. Right now I'm writing full-time, and I do clinic and guest conducting appearances, and I conduct a community band here in Northern Virginia, the Prince William Community Band for the county.
Right.
Just as a side note, I was almost a journalist. My dad was a fifth generation newsman. I worked for the Tallahassee Democrat in the newsroom for a few years while I was kind of dragging my way through college at Florida State. But eventually music won out, and I got a music ed degree and went out and taught. As a composer, or just musically in general, I started playing drums when I was a toddler. The neighbors across the street had a drum set that I just went and attacked furiously as often as I could.
Right.
My parents were grateful that it was the neighbor's house and not. And around age eight, I started noodling on, again, a neighbor's piano. We didn't have one in the house at the time. I really wish now that I had started taking lessons right away. That's my advice to people.
Right.
Take lessons. But at the same time, what I did start doing right away at the piano was figuring out how to play the music I was hearing on radio, and TV, and movies and stuff. The first arrangement, I say that in quotes, that I ever did really was I worked out the chords and the melody to the song Born Free from a movie. The same name.
Right.
Easy to play in the key of C. And although obviously I wasn't aware of this at the time because I'm only maybe 9 or 10, but I was instinctively figuring out triads and chord motion and what 1-4-5 was, for that matter. And again, not intellectually understanding, but instinctively just being able to hear it.
Right.
In middle school, my band director gave me my first chance at arranging when I got to doctor up some drum parts for a pop song that we did. It originally featured just a drum set solo, which was me, but we had like 8 or 10 kids in the percussion section, and I, for the spring concert version of this tune, I convinced Mr. Hollins to first of all let us spread it out to a 32 bar break instead of just an 8 bar break. And we did just this little buildup of percussion instruments with the drum set as the bed for it, but everybody else playing toys. But that was my first experience at arranging of any kind. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, kind of got into my head a little bit. And I started working on it a little bit more in high school. Never didn't get a lot of stuff performed. But then once I got into college at Florida State, again, back to writing drum parts, but with those drum parts, I got to look at the marching band scores, which were done by Charles Carter.
Yes.
Also on the side, so to speak, had a very successful career as a concert band.
And he certainly did, yes. Still has standard pieces.
Yes, absolutely. And at first, just not really in contact with Charlie at all, just writing drum parts to his scores. But then later, working with Charlie directly, I learned pretty much everything I knew up to that point about scoring for band. And Charlie had a very clear and methodical way of scoring, very consistent. He had, I want to say, 11 different what he called settings, basically who's got the melody, who's got harmony, who's got a counter melody. He had 11 different instrumental groupings that he would rely on and for marching band. And I think his concert band scoring was very similar in that respect.
Reflected that, yeah.
More instruments to work with. But
right.
But he, you know, he didn't vary from that very much, and he was very productive, very prolific, and very influential on me in terms of composing. The first piece I ever got published, thanks to you, when you were at Carl Fisher, was
Fifth
of Dances, and that was kind of an homage to Charlie, the main musical figure of it. It's based on his initials, the letter CEC for Charles Edward Carter. And that motif just kind of runs through a little three movement suite. That was my start. And
I think, as an aside, that piece, in my opinion, it's signature Bob Thurston, but it also does have a Charles Carter sort of feel to it as well, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, I think so. There are just in the scoring, if nothing else. And,
right.
And there are a couple of moments here and there. I'm thinking especially one little 8-bar passage in the middle section of the third movement, where it goes into this kind of dunk, 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 dunk,
right.
Kind of dancey, kind of almost, but not quite cheesy, but just fun and light and bubbly. And that, I think that's probably in my head, in my heart, that's the most Charlie moment there.
Right. So tell me a little bit about your experience writing for the Air Force Band.
I would say, first of all, it's spoiled me. I really don't have to worry about the difficulty level, or at least that was, you know, that was my delusion when I first got in. I got that job on the basis of, in terms of audition materials that I submitted, I had one concert band piece done, an original piece, which later I published in a shorter version under the title of Frontier.
Oh, right.
And I had one MIDI demo of a big band original piece that I'd done that was about 30 minutes too long. And I submitted, I don't know, it was to me kind of a thin package. And long story not worth telling, I was actually, I think, the second or third person they chose, but the first one backed out after having to wait too long to list. The second one, by the time they offered it to him, had already gotten another job. And so they called me and I said, yeah, what do you think, Miss Congeniality? What do you think? I was all too happy to take the job. The more, when I first started writing for the Air Force Band, I was going at it with this sort of wide-eyed, holy moly attitude, like, wow, I can write anything for this group. And I really did write stuff that they could play, but they'd come to me afterwards and say, you know, just because you can write this kind of level doesn't mean you really need to. Because a lot of times the kind of gigs that the military bands in general play, they do play for music, you know, music ed conventions and that kind of thing, where they want to do the standard literature, and they show themselves off for the model concert bands and other ensembles that they are. But a lot of the stuff, the other stuff that they do, is just kind of functional gigs where they're not really the star of the show. They're backup music or whatever, and they just want to get through the gig. And so I learned a lot in terms of writing, being more practical, and I found that the more I write for them, the less I really have to try to be, you know, spectacular and do every, you know, throw everything in at once. So outside of that, I'd say the most important thing that I've gotten from the Air Force Band is that I came in having written only for bands, for the wind band, but now I've learned, I did a lot of writing for orchestra, I did a lot of writing for strings, and I did a lot of writing for chorus. I learned pretty much everything I know about writing for chorus by writing for the singing sergeants. And learned about writing for big band as well. So it was, I got a whole lot of variety. And it was really just kind of a, for me, like a 20-year master class in orchestration. Those musicians were very, and are still very, very generous about helping you through a piece after they've read it down the first time or as they're rehearsing it.
Just saying,
this works really well, and here's why, or this doesn't work, and here's why. So it's a lot of that, just nuts and bolts mentoring that you get from everybody.
So while we're talking about your background and composing and writing for the Air Force Band, maybe talk a little bit about, what is your process? How do you sit down and how do you start? How do you start a piece?
I think probably most frequently I will start with just this initial burst. If someone tells me, if someone asks me to write an arrangement for them and they're asking me well in advance, the first thing I'll do, as soon as I hang up the phone, I'm excited. Here's a new tune to work with, and I'll sketch it out right away and plug in a few things here and there. And then I'll just put it away until it's closer to the time I really need to get it done. And I'll do the same thing with concert pieces as well, where somebody commissioning a piece from me might say, I need a piece for such and such an occasion. As an example, a piece I recently completed that will be performed in a couple of weeks, as a matter of fact, at the Minnesota Music Educators Conference in Minneapolis. I wrote for Bemidji State University, which will be one of the featured bands. And Scott Guidry, the director there, said, you need a fanfare to commemorate Bemidji State's 100th birthday. And really, as soon as he said fanfare, boom, 8 bars popped into my mind. Not like I immediately composed 8 bars, but there was an 8-bar idea that I had sitting around that wasn't for anything or anyone in particular, but it just went, oh yeah, I can make something out of that. And so that wasn't really a case of sketching it out immediately at the minute I was asked. It was a matter of something that was there already sketched out that I could go with. But then at the same time, I had those 8 bars, and then I just kind of let them sit and percolate for a few weeks until it was really time to get the piece done. That tends to be my process, to the extent there is one, is that I like to get an idea there and put down, even if I'm not just going to write the whole thing in 2 hours from first note to last.
So you're pretty much just like, you spring to action pretty quickly, at least with getting an initial thought.
Yes. And then I commence procrastinating. because I still find after all these years that the deadline is the most effective inspiration.
I would agree with that too. Yes.
And then in the meantime, I'll keep coming back to it. Use it even as I might juggle it along with other projects that are more imminent in terms of needing to be. And I might just kind of tinker with it, look at 4 bars and go, yeah, I like that. Or another 4 bars and go, I should change this, and I'll tweak it there. I'm not good at saving as drafts along the way so that I can come back to an earlier version of 4 bars.
I need to be better at that too.
But I also find that once I do change it and start working with it in a different way, I'm good about saving as if it's a major left turn that I'm about to take. And I generally find when that happens, I almost never go back to that original idea, even though I could, because I saved as. But I find those to be, you know, once I commit to a new direction, I find that new direction to be very helpful. Mm-hmm.
What about like writer's block? Is that something that you get to a certain point in a piece and you just don't know where to go? And
I do. And, you know, I can remember a thing I did for the Air Force Band one time. I was the chief ranger at the time, so I sort of assigned myself to write an original piece for a concert. And I had only 3 weeks to get it written. It's like a 5-minute, it was a setting of a poem called High Flight. Out of those 3 weeks, I worked for a week and a half, just very, very productively. And then I got to that point, and I think my block was just not knowing what to do tonally with one line of the poem, because I was doing a lot of text painting in there. And I just got hung up for days. And I called my original boss, Mike Davis, my predecessor as chief ranger, and talked to him about it. And we just maybe talked for about an hour, really about everything other than writer's block, or, you know, what should I do with these next 8 bars? Once I hung up the phone after this, you know, 5 days of just creative stagnation, I hung up the phone after talking with Mike and wrote the rest of the piece in the next day and a half. One of the very few times I've finished way ahead of it. But I find that, to me, the best way around writer's block tends to be either just put it away for a day or two or even longer if I have that time, and just do other stuff. You know, read a book, cook a meal. I like to just go take a walk. I can do a good 3-mile walk around my neighborhood, putter around the house. And sometimes during that walk, I will take whatever the main melody is, and I'll just run it through any kinds of just wild variations, even stupid, cheesy, idiotic variations. I mean, think of, for example, Somewhere Over the Rainbow as a Pepe Souza march in 6/8 time. You know?
Right.
You might never want to try to sell it that way, but sometimes it leads me to a more appropriate creative path for whatever tune I'm trying to work with.
I've heard that often in doing these podcasts that most composers say, just get away from it for a while.
Yeah.
You know, there are others that also say, I just keep working at it, and keep pushing through it. Yeah. I guess it is certainly personal. You know, sure. How it works. And to me, I've actually kind of done it both ways, where sometimes I let it sit and other times I just have to beat it with a hammer.
Right. Exactly. And actually that was the next thing I was going to, that was the next remedy on my list, so to speak, was just write something, anything. It doesn't matter. Even if it's awful, just keep writing. And that's usually what I will tell, you know, other composers when they ask me, just like you are at right now, just write something. It doesn't have to be great. It just needs to get you, you know, even if it gets you into the next section of your piece, and then you can go, yeah, that'll work for now. And then maybe later you'll come back to it. A lot of times I find that later when I come back to it, I'm going, I don't know, what was the matter with that in the first place?
Right.
The last thing about writer's block for me is that a lot of times I find I'm not so much blocked as I am just procrastinating, you know? Mm. Yeah, I've still got another 3 days. So I can twiddle my thumb for 2.5 days. But yeah.
How would you say, since you were back at your Florida State days and working with Charles Carter, how's your sort of the way you write music changed over the years?
Wow. That's hard to say. I'm probably more aware of ways that it hasn't changed. Because some of the things that we've talked about, I think you and I were talking about before we pushed record, about my ways of like shifting colors as frequently as possible. some kinds of, you know, particular sonorities that I'm, that I kind of use as my go-to dissonances, as they were. They're, you know, sort of friendly dissonances. I think a lot of, I'm aware of them because a lot of people who play my music, who have played different pieces of mine, they'll comment on similar things from those pieces. Probably
right.
The best example of that is, like I was talking about, that sonority. And just as a simplest example of that sonority, play a B flat triad in your right hand, play an E flat underneath it. You know?
Uh-huh.
It gives you that major nine
sort of sound, yeah.
A textbook major nine chord with
right,
a mid
right.
third. And but I find it to be it can make otherwise very simplistic harmony sound a lot more sophisticated than it really is. And it just has a, I don't know, it has a charming sound. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it's hard to say, because I'd have to think back on other older compositions. But I mean, if you go back to the first one I ever, the first full band thing that I ever sank my soul into, which was called Pioneer Overture, because I was teaching at a school where the mascot was the Pioneers.
Pioneers, yeah.
That's the piece that you helped me shorten down to publishable length, that we published as Frontier. Uh-huh. But a lot of those very same things are in there. So I hope that's not a way of saying I've just been stagnant now for 25 years.
Well, I don't, yeah, but I think every composer or people that listen to composers realize that they do have their own
yeah.
sound, their own style, their own go-to devices that they use.
Right. Right.
I mean, Mozart, Beethoven, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. I can, yeah. Beethoven to me is not even, it's not even, any kind of lick or sonority. It is basically the sound of the orchestra when they play it. I can.
Yeah. Yeah.
I suppose I'm not a Beethoven expert at all, but I've heard all of the major ones at least once. And
sure.
Even if I don't recognize it right away, oh, that's, I can go, yeah, that sounds like Beethoven. And then the announcer will confirm it for me at the end of it.
Yes. Right. Well, and I think we could say that about your pieces, that they certainly have a distinctive
yeah.
Bob Thurston sound.
Yeah. And I'm good with that.
Yeah.
Now that I've thought about it a little more, as we've been talking, probably something that I said earlier about writing for the Air Force Band, which is what they did for me. If my writing has changed, it has gotten, I think it's become more practical. And also writing for publication,
mm-hmm.
where whenever I'm writing for school bands, I keep your guidelines on my secondary monitor, just, you know, so that I know what my range is for every instrument, and what, you know, what rhythms I can use and what keys and all that kind of thing. So for publication, it's a matter of necessity. For when I'm writing for professionals, it's more a matter of, you know, just courtesy and practicality for them. But that's what I find, that if the more I write, the less adventurous I become, or at least adventurous just for the sake of being adventurous, because I can't.
Adventurous in terms of, you know, technical difficulty.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, because I find that, you know, there's limits on what you can write, obviously, for younger students.
Sure.
But obviously, as composers, we have to find a way to be creative within those limitations rather than letting them be limitations.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's a challenge.
Yeah. Because you can say, wow, this melody, I really wish it could keep going up, but it goes off the horn for them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So then you try to make it go down and you go, wow, it actually sounds better going down that way and being playable by a sixth grader. So, yeah, let's do that.
And one of the folks I've worked with before used to say, if you have to change the melody to make it fit within, you know, sort of the technical limitations, the only person who's going to know that you had to change it was you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yes, that's one of my, I hadn't really thought of that. But yeah, that's one of my go-to responses when I'm doing this, you know, that, I'm the only one who knows. Yeah. Even pros, they're not going to know. It's just, nobody's going to care. The audience is not going to, is certainly not going to know. Yeah, man, that should.
Well, and also it's good advice for young composers who are interested in doing what you've done.
Yeah.
That you can't necessarily be so married to every single note you write.
Yes.
And allow there to be flexibility in your composition to be edited.
Yes.
Alter things to make them better fit the needs of the students.
Yes.
And that doesn't necessarily make them less musically satisfying.
Exactly. And, you know, I'll use you as an example. When I first submitted Festive Dances to you, I thought that piece was done and as close to perfect as I was ever going to be able to make it. And you made some very constructive suggestions, including, for example, it's the best example I can think of from that piece, is when I submitted it to you, it didn't feel like it had a real introduction. You said, you need a more exciting, more grabbing introduction. And my instinctive thought was, what's the matter with what's there? But, you know, I did it, and I think it improved the piece. And every other, I can't remember specific examples from that one that you made. But basically, I found you were the one who taught me that a good editor is a great thing, you know, because even if I don't make every change you suggest, it forces me to think about things and consider why it absolutely has to be that way if it does. Or to consider that it doesn't have to be that way, really. I've found in my writing for the Air Force Band that Colonel Lang, Larry Lang, who just a couple of weeks ago retired after 7 years as the commander conductor there, he is also just a superb editor in that sense of being able to listen to it either on the basis of a MIDI demo that I send him, because I don't have to worry about him thinking that's really an authentic representation of this. Or after the first one or two read-throughs, he'll just give me a list of things to say, I like this, this isn't working, this is not me, can you make a change here? And in every single instance where I have followed those suggestions with him and with you, I think it's made the piece better. And to your original point, I think that is something that younger composers, beginning composers, have a hard time with. You know,
sure.
I like it this way. And a lot of times they'll hear it being played by real people and they'll go, oh yeah, I understand what you were saying.
Right.
You can write as hard as you want if you know that ensemble that you're writing for is going to be able to handle it.
Right.
If you're writing a lot of times for a publication, you're just writing for sort of a spec ensemble that you've never heard before. It is the standard of all ensembles. Mm-hmm. It's right there in the middle. And
right.
You gotta write stuff that those people can handle and relate to as musicians. So
absolutely. Yeah. So this is from the Composer Series from Excelsi Music Publishing, and I'm Larry Clark. Thank you for listening.